I will convene the Joint Committee on Legislative Audits and Information Management and Technology for February 28, 2014. We have approximately an hour and 17 minutes at the most to complete our work. I'll try to ensure that we even complete it a little earlier than that. My apologies to the people in the audience and the members of the committee. The Senate went long into the lunch hour. I'm actually also the chair of the Oregon Transparency Commission. I had to ascertain the votes of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle. At the end of the session, I had to ascertain the votes of the people on the Democratic side of the aisle after the session so that I could communicate to the House where the Senate is on a particular bill by this afternoon. So that's probably more transparency than you see in the legislative process on a normal basis, but since I chair that commission, I thought it'd be a good idea. The first item on the agenda is a status report on Cover Oregon, a fairly serious subject that this committee has spent considerable amount of time on. We were actually going to spend all 4 weeks of our meeting on updates on Cover Oregon, and of course we had a little circumstance in the first meeting, a little snow on the ground, which is hard to imagine now. But so we have a status report on Cover Oregon. This is the final meeting of this committee during this session. And so if Dr. Goldberg would come up forward, and also Mr. Karjala, and if they could start off on that report, and I will get a mood of the committee of how many questions they want to ask and when. But I would actually ask that they at least be able to start into the report for a good at least 5 or 10 minutes before we actually start peppering them with questions.
Vega Peterson, co-chairs Vega Peterson and Devlin, members of the committee. For the record, Bruce Goldberg, I am the interim director of Cover Oregon. With me today is Aaron Karjala. He's been here updating you from a technology standpoint. I think we'll continue that today, letting Aaron walk through the presentation. But we had talked about how we might go back and forth and split things up and felt for continuity, let Aaron walk you through the presentation, and I'm certainly here to answer any and all questions that you have. So with that, I'm going to turn things over to Aaron.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Aaron Karjala. I'm the Chief Information Officer for Cover Oregon. I've returned today to provide an overview for the current status of the Cover Oregon technology solution that supports the health insurance exchange for Oregon. Today I'm going to talk about project staffing updates as well as progress in correcting deficiencies. We are going to also talk through enrollment processes as seen from an end user's point of view. We're going to cover some enrollment statistics and the progress that we made with enrollments. We're going to describe the go and no-go process for a full individual launch, and we're also going to describe the process that we're following for the moving forward plan, the long-range plan for the Cover Oregon technology. I'd like to start today by talking through the project staffing update. As I mentioned in the hearing last week, Cover Oregon is moving into a post-production support phase. And what that means is that we do not have any more major releases prior to making the decision for a full individual launch. Rather, we are spending our time polishing the system, removing some IT system issues that we've identified post-launch. And with that, we've started to decrease some staffing levels, specifically some of the Oracle staffing levels, in preparation or in the process of moving into a full post-production launch. What I want to emphasize with that is, though there is a net a decrease in Oracle staffing, there still will be between 60 and 70 Oracle staff members on board, helping to fix issues that we've identified post-release. We do not need the previous level staffing levels because we are not in the process of building new things at this point. Prior to the release, we were actually building and completing the new functionality, and we had hundreds of things that we were looking and that we ultimately implemented into the technology solution to support both agents and community partners as well as individuals. Post that time, we don't need that level of developers. The other thing I want to report on is we are actually increasing staffing in other areas, such as the areas that are supporting our go-forward planning, our review of the system to assess the areas of the system that are working well and the areas that are not, and in the areas of oversight of processes and helping us to transition some of the processes that Oracle once performed into Cover Oregon. I've shared this slide in several of the previous hearings. Since last week's hearing, we have not made any major releases, and we have not launched into the full individual launch. We have continued to operate and maintain the system in support of the agents and community partners, but there are no slides in the current functional deployment. We are focused on some polishing defects, and we are continuing down in the numbers of issues that we're managing in the between 8 and 20 range. We are not working through hundreds of issues, and we're continuing to basically release fixes on a periodic basis when we identify issues within the system. So I talked last week about the agent and community partner launch, and I described that launch as providing a partner website that allows agents and community partners to go through from application phase all the way to enrollment and coverage within either a private health plan or Medicaid. That's part of the system has been has been functional and released to the agent and community partners since last Tuesday. When I came last Tuesday, I reported that we had already generated 700 enrollments out of that part of the portal. As of this morning, we now have 1,750 enrollments. So we've increased to over 1,000 enrollments since last week. When I came last week, I talked that the system had largely been stable. We have had some areas of instability within the system, which we have addressed over the course of the week. And we're continuing to identify areas that where we need to smooth the system out and polish it. So I'm going to talk about the actual processes, specifically starting with what we call the hybrid process for enrollment, and then I'll go into the agent and community partner process for enrollment, as Co-Chair Vega Peterson had requested that we do in the last hearing. So individuals within the hybrid process can go on to coveroregon.com. They can bring up a fillable form and fill that form out and submit it, and that is automatically routed to Cover Oregon. They have an alternative to be able to fill out a paper application a written paper application, mail it to Cover Oregon. We scan that into our system, and then the system and that loads it in, and then we get to the next steps. In previous hearings, we were requested to be able to answer what happens with the paper once we've had a solid piece of paper that we need to deal with. That That paper is stored on site in a secure location within the processing centers, and it is held for 30 days, and then a secure mobile shredding facility comes on site and actually destroys that paper. At this point, we are keeping the digital copies or the electronic copies of those scanned items in the system, and it is protected by the standard system security that we have in place elsewhere in the application.
Mr. Chair, I hate to break your rules.
Sir, you said that you can scan in the paper application. The computer is able to read everything on there and put it into a computerized digital form? Or do you have to do this by hand?
Co-Chair Devlin, Senator Olson, when we scan the paper in, it's stored, and there's pieces of what happens actually is we create an account for that person within the back end of the system, and there's information that's generated on that account. Then that goes into a queue. It's an electronic queue that our eligibility workers can take, and then they can actually take and read the application. At this point, they are interpreting off of the scanned image and putting it into the system. We are not automatically taking the information off of that paper and putting it into the system at this time.
That's what I want to follow up. I wanted to be clear on is the fact that when you scan this paper, the computer doesn't automatically apply it and put it in. It has to be done manually. Thank you.
Correct. So the next step is we go from, if it's online, it will go into a holding area, which is within the back end of the system, which is very similar to the holding area of when a hard copy piece of paper is scanned. A staff takes that, they enter pieces off of that application, and at that point, the system automatically determines eligibility for either Medicaid or private health coverage, and in addition assesses eligibility for tax credits and other eligibility components. So from here, there's two different paths, and I will start with the Medicaid path first.
Can I, since my rule has already been broken, I'm afraid.
Surprised it lasts as long as it did. So.
If an agent is assisting, or one of your navigators is assisting, putting in an application, does that application still need the data to be re-entered, or is that going directly into the system?
Co-Chair Devlin, agents have the choice of actually using either process, and they can indicate themselves on the paper process if they would like. And we, at that point, when we're creating the account in the back end or adding to that account, we would reference the agent or community partner who sent in the paperwork. If they're using the portal, then there is not that process of having to take and key into the system. It is automatically stored within the back end of the system.
That's the new functionality. The portal is the new site for agents.
I'm just trying
and community
to make sure
partners.
That there's not a... Okay.
The one thing I will add to that is that when the full individual launch were to occur, the same for individuals. It's the same, actually, the same technology and functions would occur, where an individual would go through and information would be stored in the back end, and we would be able to use that for the other business functions of the exchange, finance, sending it to the carriers, et cetera.
Please proceed.
So on the Medicaid path, if an individual is found to be eligible for Medicaid, they're covered from that point. That information is then sent over to the health authority. They are enrolled into their systems, and then the paperwork or the packet is then sent to them that gives them the information about the coverage that they are going to receive. For a private individual, The system generates a packet. It has information on it, which includes their tax credit, as well as other information that, that kind of identifies who they are within the system. Their system, their specific, that specific information, so Cover Oregon can identify them, as well as how they are formed out into shopping groups. So, as I've reported before, our system has the ability to take and make the decision for how to group people in the most efficient manner in terms of coverage. And in that case, we send them information about how they're grouped. When they get that packet, they can go on to coveroregon.com and they can enter that information, and then they will be presented with a list of plans. So they enter their tax credit information, their shopping group information, and their customer ID. They're presented with a set of plans. They can select the plans and actually then send that information to Cover Oregon, where it's automatically routed, and we load it into the system that matches to their eligibility and complete the enrollment process. Once we've done that, we and this is on a daily basis, we then send lists of those enrollments over to the insurance plans, where they go through their processes and their systems. They send a bill to the consumer. The consumer pays that first month's premium, what they're billed for, and they are covered.
So when does coverage begin?
I'm sorry,
Madam Chair. Okay. Senator Beyer, then, and then Co-Chair Vega Peterson.
Co-Chairs, Senator Beyer. So enrollment occurs within the system at the time that they are deemed eligible and that we actually enroll them in the system. The coverage is what's called effectuated when the individual has paid their first month's premium. That's the way that insurance, yeah, that's the way it has worked. That isn't new with Cover Oregon.
It begins the first of the month.
And it begins the first of the
individuals
month.
Individuals that in are determined eligible for the first 15 days of the month can enroll, pay their premium, and enroll on the first of the next month. If it's the last 15 days of the month, it's the month after. And for Medicaid, however, coverage begins on when they submit an application. So it's retroactive to the submission of the application.
Co-Chair Vega Peterson.
Thank you, Co-Chair. So for the private insurance piece, when after the enrollment is processed and sent to the insurance company, insurance company sends a bill and the consumer pays the first month's premium. Is that done electronically or through paper, or does it depend on the insurance area?
Co-Chair Vega Peterson, it is primarily done electronically, but it does depend on the insurance carrier. They all have their different processes that they follow.
Okay. Follow up?
Yes.
Do you have a timeline? Do you? What? How long does the whole process take for the private insurance piece? Do you have an estimate?
Good question.
Co-Chair Vega Peterson, I don't have an average time that it takes. What I can tell you is that process, basically, we move everything along for the most part at the same day that we have it. So it all depends on how the problem with trying with assessing the time is there's a lot of variables depending on the carrier, depending on where we are with our processing, all of those issues. But we can actually research that and get back to you if that's helpful.
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
You had mentioned that when they come in and they fill out their paperwork, you could send it to the insurance company and they can pay their premium. Then if it's at the beginning of the month, they're covered, and at the end of the month, they flip to the next month. What happens to those folks that lost their insurance policies? Are they without insurance until that gap catches up to them, and you know you've got the 15-day gap? Are they still without insurance until that time?
Co-Chair, Senator Olson, members of the committee, if someone has lost their policy in the beginning of the month and they are not deemed eligible until the first of the next month, they in essence would be uncovered during that month. That's correct.
Do we have a number, a follow-up, do we have a number as to how many of those people exist?
Co-Chair Senator Olson, we do not. And that's been one of the, what we've been indicating to individuals is due to the difficulties in the system and the inability to be enrolled sort of same day, if individuals are concerned about maintaining coverage, they can go directly to a carrier and enroll directly to a carrier over the phone or through the internet. The issue is they would not, up until recently, be eligible for a tax subsidy, a tax credit, if they went directly to a carrier. We've been working with the federal government, and I think you may have seen yesterday there was an announcement that we will now be able to go back and retroactively get those individuals their tax credit if indeed they signed up, went directly to a carrier, signed up for a plan that was on the Cover Oregon market. They'll be able to retroactively get a tax credit.
Please proceed.
So I will now describe the process that the agents and community partners can use to enroll their customers in coverage. So the first step is the agent and community partner working with their customers will log into the Cover Oregon partner portal, and they will enter the information. They'll basically go through an interview style process through the portal, which collects the necessary information from their customers, and then ultimately the system then automatically determines eligibility, whether it be for Medicaid or for a private insurance plan. At that point, if they choose, and I, the one thing I want to emphasize also, through any of these major steps, depending on how it is that the consumer or the agent or community partner would like to proceed, they can save and exit and come back later, or they can choose to go all the way through the system in one sitting. So after eligibility, then they are presented with, they go through the determination, and again, if they are Medicaid eligible, they are immediately covered on the date that the application was entered into the system by the agent or the community partner. If they are eligible for a private health plan with or without tax credits, then they can go through and immediately begin to shop for plans that would be most advantageous for their situation due to coverage types and costs and things like that. So once they've selected a plan, then they basically select the plan. They sign for that plan, just like you'd sign for a policy, and that information is stored in the Cover Oregon system, and they're now enrolled in the Cover Oregon system. We send that information over to the carrier. They go through those same processes that they would go through when I described the hybrid process. And once the consumer pays the first month premium, then the consumer is covered.
So someone can walk into an agent's office, sit down, and be determined eligible, be able to shop for a plan, choose a plan, and walk out having been enrolled in that plan. There's no staff that have to do what Senator Olson was referring to. No one needs to go in and enter that, and then we don't need to send someone the information and have them send it back. They can walk out the same day. The only one step is we then, at Cover Oregon, need to transmit that to the insurer. And so that is the benefit of the new functionality that agents and partners have.
Okay, now I'm going to provide an update on where we are with overall enrollments. And as you can see, the number of medical enrollments through Cover Oregon. We've had 38,806 people enroll in private health coverage. We've had 84,991 people enroll in Medicaid coverage for a total of 123,797 people. You see that we also have another 35,000 people who are determined eligible for private health insurance, and we've sent them the packets that I've described, which have their potential tax credit amount, how they're grouped out in terms of coverage, and their customer number. But they have not yet chosen or have not yet went on to coveroregon.com to choose a plan. In addition, the Oregon Health Authority Fast Track enrollments have reached 128,434 people covered in Medicaid, and that is for a total of 252,231 total lives covered within Oregon, both through Fast Track and Cover Oregon.
Dr. Goldberg. Just to relate that, 128 from the Oregon Health Authority and the 84 through Cover Oregon, 84 plus 1,000. What is our total enrollment now in Medicaid up to?
Co-Chair Devlin, members of the committee, it's been a few months since I've been at the Health Authority and don't have my daily OHP enrollment, but my guess would be just over 800,000 people, but again, that's a guess.
Ballpark, health.
Yeah, we had about 650,000, and there's some people that come and go. But my guess is we're around 800,000 now.
Please proceed.
Now I'm going to cover both the go and no-go process for individual launch, and actually this is the same process that we have followed for the agent and community partner launch as well. And after that, I'm going to talk about the process that we are following for the longer range planning and ultimately the next phase of the Cover Oregon technology and what we're going to be, what decisions we're going to be making and how we're going to make those decisions. So I'll start with the go-no-go process for individual launch. As you may recall in previous hearings, we define launch criteria. I call them success criteria. They're the same thing. And we do the development and the test cycle, which I have described in previous hearings as well, where we develop the new functionality, we test it, we fix it, we test it, we fix it until, and we continue to compare that to the criteria that we had developed until we are comfortable that it meets our business objectives and needs. We establish frequent go-no-go checkpoints, which for the go-no-go checkpoints, those are where we bring the individuals together who are involved in the launch, which are part of what is called the deployment team, and we review where the system is according to those launch criteria. When the launch criteria has met our needs, or either by fully meeting every criteria that we've set, or meeting enough criteria and having a success, acceptable risk for launch, then we'll make a decision to launch and ultimately launch. That is the process that we followed for agents and community partners, and it is the same process that we're following for a full individual launch.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Olson.
I hate to back up, but I just found it on my screen. This computer is a new one for me. It's kind of funky. You say in your enrollments through February 27th, that's your cumulative enrollments to date.
Correct.
And you say that the total enrollments are 800,000?
Go ahead.
this includes the people that were already in the Medicaid system,
okay.
The 800,000.
Okay, because from the reason I'm asking is from February 6th to February 27th, your total enrollments went from 226,108 to 252,231. That's not a very good increase in a month.
No. Dr. Goldberg, why don't you explain?
Please, sure. That's my confusion.
Okay. Apologies. Co-chairs, Senator, also members of the committee. Senator Devlin had asked specifically about Oregon Health Plan enrollment and what it was, Medicaid enrollment total. And what you can see on this chart is that close to about 200,000 people have come into Medicaid since January 1, either through Cover Oregon or through the fast track process. About a little over 80,000 through Cover Oregon and over 120,000 through the fast track process. The 800,000 comes, there were already 650,000 people in Medicaid. So that was the additional enrollment into Medicaid, and it's the total Medicaid enrollment that I was asked to provide.
Okay, but to date you've only enrolled 252,000 people, which includes Medicaid?
Yes. That's both Medicaid. The 250 figure is both Medicaid statewide as well as the private insurance, and we've enrolled 38,800 is the portion of that which is the private health insurance coverage.
Okay, follow up?
Yeah.
The Medicaid is paid by the federal government. Will it always be paid by the federal government? Go ahead.
I should let the budget expert.
He
knows as well as I do.
Go ahead.
This will get very complex.
Just say yes or no.
Well, yeah. There's all different types of matching formulas, but for the parties that previously were categorical and for some of the parties that were previously part of the standard population, it was normally about a 60-40 match, although it varies by a few percentage points. For the newly added, it's 100% federal, although I would guess, and Dr. Gold could clarify me, in terms of the administrative cost, that's still probably shared the normal way.
It's 50-50 for the administrative costs, but the medical benefit, which is the expensive piece, for the 200,000 that are on this page, is fully funded by federal funds through 2016. And then after 2016, it begins to diminish. After 7 years, it goes down to 90% federally funded and 10% state funded.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yes,
Mr. Chair, just a question, clarifying.
Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you very much. I'm looking at the report also from February 6th, and it categorizes, one of the categories is enrollment through Cover Oregon, and it kind of goes down similarly to what you laid out in this report, but it just says Medicaid.
Pardon me. Could we get the cell phone or whatever device turned off?
Somebody hit their Siri, probably.
Okay.
But anyway, the February 6th report, it just counts the number. It says Medicaid. That's what it's labeled. And this report is labeled Medicaid/OHP. Is there really a difference, or was that just left off of the initial report, the OHP part?
Co-chairs, Rep. Thatcher, members of the committee, don't know exactly what you're referring to. I think the issue is on
February 6th.
Medicaid is OHP.
Yeah. Medicaid is OHP.
Okay, that's what I just wanted to make sure.
And what this tries to do is show that there's two ways into Medicaid.
Okay.
That the top piece are the enrollments that have come through Cover Oregon. So those 80,000 have gone into Medicaid OHP through Cover Oregon.
Got it.
When someone comes in, there's one place. Often people don't know whether they're at 135% of poverty, which would qualify them for Medicaid, or 160% of poverty, which would put them into private coverage. And so there's one place to come in, and 123,000 people have come through Cover Oregon, 84,000 have been enrolled in Medicaid, 38 in private coverage, and then there are the 128,000 that have come directly into Medicaid through the Oregon Health Authority, but not at all through Cover Oregon.
But still, Medicaid slash OHP, that category is the same
thing. It's the same.
As what,
those,
that's all
those
I wanted
80
to know.
And
thank you. Got it.
They go
that's
exactly
it.
Into
got
the
it.
Same spot.
Just want to make sure. Thanks.
Great.
I've been a little bit remiss not welcoming Representative Greenlech to the committee. I didn't know if he was a new assignment or not, or if he's just...
He's a guest.
He's what?
He's a guest.
He's a guest. He could seek a future assignment.
I appreciate you allowing me to be here, sir.
Quite welcome. I would remind the committee that we should probably try to get through this in the next 10 to 12 minutes, because the next item on the agenda is the report on the independent assessments related to Cover Oregon, and I wanted to make sure that we got to that portion of the agenda. So please proceed.
I won't spend very much time on this slide. Basically, it breaks... The next slide. It breaks the core pillars, as we call them, out and describes what they are. And basically the purpose of this slide is just to illustrate that when we do a launch and we do the go-no-go, it is not just considering the technology. It's considering the technology, our organizations, as well as our stakeholders and partners' readiness, the business readiness, and our ability to support what will be released, both from a technical perspective as well as an operational perspective. And the priorities that we are using going forward in post-production support are to improve the usability and responsiveness for the hybrid process and for agents and community partners, eliminating workarounds and improving system performance, and preparing the system ultimately for a full individual launch. So the next... subject I'm going to cover is how we are approaching the longer term plan in terms of technology planning for Cover Oregon. And the steps that we are following are first, identifying guiding criteria for that long range technology plan, which I'll describe in a minute. We're analyzing the current system capabilities, and that is in process right now. We are identifying options based on that analysis in comparison to other alternatives, and we're assessing the options per the guiding criteria so that we can select the best option for the long range plan for Cover Oregon. The technology options that we've found to date, and this is we are, as I had mentioned earlier, we are in the process of going through this process. The first is to stay the course with the current technology. That has different flavors to it. We could stay the course with all of the exact same players, the same vendors, and keep basically doing status quo. We could stay the course with the technology and actually make adjustments to how we're managing the go-forward implementations and improvement for the technology. Or we could, transfer a functioning technology from another state, either in whole or in part. So I had mentioned that we're going through a process to assess the working components of the system. If we find that we would like to use as much of the investment as we can, if not all of it. And if we find that there's a more cost-effective or a better way to bring in part of a system but continue to use some of the existing system, we would do that. We could use the federal exchange technology in whole or in part. And again, that would be the same as transferring in a state system, another state's technology. Or we could purchase a technology product to replace the current system in whole or in part. So again, there's going to be a gamut of alternatives within each of these larger options. And again, there could be other alternatives that we identify as we go through this process, but this is what we have been able to identify to date.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Thatcher.
You talked about the moving forward, the technology options, right, in that previous slide, and you say that those are the ones that we have been able to come up with. Is that just within Cover Oregon? Who is we?
So we have Cover Oregon has brought in a third party to assist us to analyze those options.
Thank you. Clarifying, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, please proceed.
So the options are being identified and analyzed in terms of the following criteria. The timeline, how long would it take us to follow any of those options that have been identified. The cost, not only initial cost, but ongoing operational costs for pursuing an option, and technical feasibility. You know, even if it's a lower cost and a short timeline, how feasible would it be to pursue any of the particular options? So I'll give an example of technical feasibility, that if we choose that we want to do any of the options other than stay with our current technology, we would need to assess the complexity for we've amassed a great deal of data within our system. As you see, we've generated enrollments through the system. There's a lot of information stored in that system at this point. If we're going to go any of the other options, we would need to assess the complexity for getting that information out and put it into another option, because we need to have that continuity. So that gives you an example of something around technical feasibility.
To interject here, and I know we only have a few minutes left, in the issue of cost, I guess in my current position in the legislature, just that word actually causes me some concern. The development of the system has largely been paid for with federal dollars, which I don't know the future of. What I do kind of know, at least what I've been told recently about how many federal dollars are left, I don't know the future of any potential additional federal dollars. I would hope in the discussion of cost there would be a discussion of how you would pay, because just even the development of the system or the transition in changing the system is one issue. And then the second issue that's still lingering out there is the ongoing cost of Cover Oregon and the question about whether the enrollments will ever equal the level adequate enough without some general fund support to actually pay for the operation. So I'm just wondering how the issue of cost is being approached. That might be best for Dr. Goldberg.
Yeah. Co-Chair Devlin, members of the committee, we're looking and considering the cost from a perspective of no general fund, that the cost of doing this would be done within the remaining dollars that we have, as well as looking to Cover Oregon to continue to be self-sufficient on into 2015. So the issue is to continue in the current paradigm of federal support for the remainder of the development through 2014, and then self-sufficiency and sustainability in 2015. Yes. And that's going to help guide what that cost is. Obviously, an option that would take us substantially beyond that, we wouldn't be able to consider.
Please proceed.
So I'd like to provide the timeline in terms of where we are with this go-forward plan. So we've already began, as I mentioned, we've already begun the initial exploration and development of options, which we presented previously. We have been working with a third party to lead a structured process for outlining the choices for the Cover Oregon board. So we've got our criteria, we've got our technology choices. We have somebody who will help us go through that decision-making process and outline those for the Cover Oregon board. Finally, Cover Oregon intends to finalize the next steps in the late March or early April timeframe. So that concludes what I had to share today.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. You've stated that you'll finalize your steps on your process, whether you're going to keep with the program or integrate other programs to it in late March or early April. On the assumption that this dog doesn't hunt, you're going to have to go out and buy some other software to fit in. Do you have you categorized the timeline that it would take to integrate, such as, you know, a piece of Kentucky's or a piece of somebody that's working? Have you categorized the timeline it would take to integrate that?
Co-chairs, Senator Olson, we have in a very rough fashion, we have a rough order of magnitude estimates of what that would take. Part of this process is we're going to have to continue to remove the peel the onion away to get to more and more detail. So that is part of it, of looking at both if we had to do something with data, if we had to reintegrate with new systems or parts of new systems, if we had to turn off parts of our system to do that, we need to look at all those things, and that's what we have third parties on board to help us with.
If the process goes to the conclusion I think it's going to get to, will this include Oracle helping with the integration, or will Oracle be removed and this new third party put in place to stabilize your software?
Co-chairs, Senator Olson, it actually depends on how the decision-making process proceeds. One of the options is that Oracle stays in place and continues to their integration work for the system. Another one of those options also is that we would bring somebody new in to do that. So it really will depend on, as we're doing the in-depth analysis, what is going to be best in terms of timeline, cost, and technical feasibility. So we have not made any decisions at this point for the long-range plan.
Yes, Representative Thatcher, and then we will move on to the next agenda item.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, as long as I've been on this committee, it always seems like we just don't have enough time to really get into too much depth. But this is, I have a question that's more historical, not forward, because looking at the highlights of the 2013-15 legislatively adopted budget report that was put out there under the chapter heading for information technology, it points out this particular project, of course, as being one of legislative interest. And then down at the bottom, where it talks about committee oversight activities, since the decision was made not to have this committee, the Joint Committee on Legislative Audits, Information Management and Technology, that these projects would instead be overseen by the appropriate subcommittee. And so Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee for Human Services, I imagine, would have been the committee that would be overseeing this, if I'm not wrong. And if that's the case, I only saw one meeting where And that's what I'm trying to figure out. Were there a lot of meetings, updates, et cetera, beyond the February, what did I find? I found one on February 20th, 2013, where there was an informational meeting on Cover Oregon. But beyond that, I couldn't find anything. So otherwise, how was the oversight, how was it done?
I might clarify, and then if Dr. Goldberg would expand on that. Our particular committee, actually, like all committees, we are created and then we actually expire at the beginning of the next session, and then we're recreated again. Committees don't usually continue on, that are committees that are appointed by the presiding officers. So in the particular case of this committee, it had its last meeting in November of 2012, I believe, November, December 2012. Then met again for the first time in September of 2013, had some other subjects because there's other IT projects and other audits than this in the September meeting, and then in the November meeting of 2013 was the first time Cover Oregon was back before this committee. But at the same time, Cover Oregon was in front of Representative Greenlick's committee a number of times during.
Also, there's a joint legislatively appointed oversight committee that's
right,
been meeting
monthly. In addition to that, yeah. Representative Greenlick's right. There's the oversight committee
from the legislature. It's before Representative Greenlake's health care related committee, Senator Monis Anderson's health care related committee did come to the subcommittee on human services at least once, but those are more for budget items. In the budget report, I have to be just a little bit. In the budget report, Ellif Oates tends to write things from legislative fiscal's perspective, so that the committees that are within the purview of LFO, that's where the purview is over this function. It's not in this committee, but because this is not actually a subcommittee of Ways and Means. So, Dr. Goldberg, if you want to fill in.
I think well stated. I know that Cover Oregon, Mr. King, Aaron, appeared over the last couple of years repeatedly in front of the House Health Committee, the Senate Health Committee, and at Ways and Means. We'll get you the list, as well as there's a joint oversight group of four legislators that I believe met monthly with Cover Oregon staff, at least for the last few months that I've been at Cover Oregon. We meet monthly with that legislative oversight committee. Not a committee, it's I guess not an official committee, it's a appointed group.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that the Legislative Oversight Advocacy Committee that kind of has these meetings? That
advocacy was something that Cover Oregon added to the name. It is an
Oversight and Advocacy committee.
But unfortunately, we never really were given any information on the IT process. We met on other issues, and we never had the advice of, say, the LFO people who were looking at that. We never received memos from LFO. And we never got into that. That's why I'm here today, to learn about.
Okay. If I might clarify your comment, because you said the LFO people, the LFO person at that time is still in the back corner back there, because we had one person at that time. Now we have two.
I was fortunate enough to read the Oregonian memos sent out by the LFO person, but they never sent any. Whoever it was never sent any memos to the officially appointed oversight committee.
Okay. Okay, we'll move on to the next agenda item. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Sarah Millick could come forward. This is on the independent assessments related to Cover Oregon. As you may actually know, obviously, this was commissioned by the governor. There is not a report or a draft report at this time, but I believe Ms. Miller probably in about 5 minutes can give us a view of where they're at, and that'll still allow us maybe 7 or 8 minutes for questions. Ms. Miller, please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Vega-Peterson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Miller. I'm the state's Deputy Chief Operating Officer, and I work at the Department of Administrative Services. I'm here today because I'm the contract administrator of the third-party assessment of the Cover Oregon website implementation project. The governor asked DAS to engage a contractor to complete a third-party assessment of the website portion of Cover Oregon. So to be clear, scope was limited to the technology project. We've not done a review of adequacy of health plans or in any of those cases. This governor was very interested in the answers to questions that Oregonians have on their mind, and the seven questions have been generally available to legislative members and published in the newspaper, but if the committee would like, I could read them for the record.
Okay.
Question number one, when did the website project team or any of its members realize or begin to realize the website was not going to be ready? Who first realized that it would not be ready? Question number two, who was in position to make decisions as it related to the website project? Question number three, did the website project or any of its members have a plan B for operations developed when the website project team or any of its members began to realize that the exchange was not going to work? If not, why not? Question number four, did the state or Cover Oregon consider engaging a system integrator to assist with the website project? If not, why not? Did the website project team or any of its members believe the state or Cover Oregon had the expertise to undertake the website project without the assistance of a systems integrator? If so, why? Question number five, what was the basic oversight and governance accountability as it relates to multiple parties? and the procurement, administration, and finances of vendor services. So Cover Oregon, both its board and its leadership team, OHA, both its leadership team and the IT services, the Department of Human Services, Oracle, Maximus in its role as a QA vendor, and all other associated vendors with the website project. Question number six, why were Oracle products and services chosen? And then question number seven, how was the original scope of the website project determined and by whom? To what degree did the scope of the website project delay the project implementation? How was the scope managed? After the website project team or any of its members realized that the website was not going to work, would it have been possible to change scope? And if so, how? The Office of the Chief Operating Officer, on behalf of the state, is acting as the contract manager for this assessment. The assessment's being completed by First Data Government Solutions. So I imagine your first question is why First Data and why the Department of Administrative Services acting in this capacity. So the COO's office maintains a master price agreement in support of enterprise initiatives. In early 2011, we conducted a competitive procurement which resulted in 21 pre-qualified vendors across five service categories. We negotiated master contracts with all of those vendors so that they had already agreed to the state's terms and conditions, and individual work orders could be issued for particular work in an efficient manner. First Data was one of three pre-qualified vendors that was invited to submit a proposal to the state to complete this assessment, and it turns out they have differentiating qualifications, having worked with five or six other state health insurance exchanges. So they have experience in state exchanges implemented by California, Colorado, and Connecticut. They've worked with states that do partnership exchanges, including Arkansas and Illinois. They have staffed their project team with high-level vice presidents who are boots-on-the-ground people doing the work on a day-to-day basis, followed up by research and analysts in the background analyzing the more than 2,500 documents that have been handed over. So I understand probably you're interested in sort of what does this six-week assessment process look like. The First Data proposal came and asked for a bunch of background documentation to be produced in advance of them coming on site to conduct interviews because they wanted to be able to ask contextualized specific information. When we originally got their proposal, we anticipated them starting work in the first week of January, but the 15 categories of documents included about 2,500 individual documents. Emails, contracts, deliverables that needed in the areas of things like project governance, contracts, RFPs, proposals, board minutes, procurement documents, project management plans, federal gate reviews, deliverables, requirements, status reports, and contingency plans. So it took the state longer than we had initially estimated to compile all those documents from all the different sources. The Oregon Health Authority had some of them, the Department of Human Services had some of them, Cover Oregon had some of them, and then all of the different oversight bodies had individual ones. And so they wanted those documents in advance of coming on site, so their first week on site in Oregon was the week of February 3rd. Over the past 3 weeks, they've actually conducted 67 total interviews with all kinds of people associated with the project. So they've sat with governor's staff, they've sat with OHA and DHS leadership, management, and staff. They have interviewed Cover Oregon board members. They have interviewed Cover Oregon leadership and staff. They have sat with Oracle staff. They have sat with Maximus staff. They have sat with most other contractors associated with the project. They have sat with the Department of Administrative Services state CIO analysts. They have sat with LFO's IT oversight staff, and they have interviewed seven key legislators. And so they are now in the process of taking the results of 67 interviews and crosswalking that to the information that they were received in the 2,500 documents that they've gotten to be able to, in a factual way, answer the seven questions asked for by the governor. They have reserved the right to do follow-up interviews if necessary, although right now it appears like we don't expect a large number of follow-up interviews to need to occur. So the current schedule is a briefing for the governor's office to happen in week six, which would be the second week of March. There's been a lot of reporting about the report and the final report as a result of this assessment, and perception that there would actually be two reports. And so for the record in front of this committee, I'd like to be clear that the contract was issued in a way that required First Data to submit the report to DOJ for compliance with Oregon's public records law. The same law that allows for and creates transparency and accountability state government documents requires the protection of certain kinds of information. And so the production of the First Data report to DOJ for redaction review would simply be to evaluate its content and see whether the public records law requires any particular redaction. The most likely candidate of that kind of information would be something that Oracle would assert as a trade secret. So the public records law allows for trade secrets to be removed if identified. But I can tell you that there is no indication right now that the final report, we expect for there to be any Oracle trade secret data to be in it. So if there is no data in the report that the public records law would require us to redact, there will be only one report delivered. It will be delivered to the governor and available to the parties that are interested in receiving it in its unredacted form, assuming that there's no information that the public records law would require us. So in conclusion, really, I think the governor has asked for this review to provide him additional data. The thing that the First Data assessment does that maybe the Maximus QA reports don't do is connect all the players and all the parts. You can see by the list of people who they have interviewed that they're coming at this as a total umbrella look across all of the transitions that have occurred. And so I think it's an opportunity for him to have additional accountability decisions if he needs to, or certainly to be the foundation for learning how to do future IT projects of this scale. And that's the end of my prepared remarks. I'm happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Questions? Yes. Representative Harker.
Thank you, Chair. Hi. Thanks for bringing this to us. I understand that a decision was made. No, let me back up. I understand that First Data, in previous investigations such as they're carrying out now, has often conducted interviews with audio and video recording, and that they requested that happen in this situation, but that the state somehow decided that that was inappropriate. So my question is, how and by whom was that decision made?
Senator Devlin, Representative Harker, the COO's office made that decision in consultation with our attorneys.
Anyone?
Representative Patrick.
Follow up.
I thought I'd see if anyone else wanted to follow up.
I'll ask the question. For what purpose? If, please respond, but then I'll give you what I think is a logical response for why I think your attorneys advised you to do that.
Co-Chair Devlin, Senator Olson, I'm going to say that we did it under advice of our attorneys, for the record.
Okay. How many attorneys we have on the panel? I don't believe we actually have any.
Amazing.
But my guess, having been involved in some previous litigation in the outside world, it would have been that those records in potential litigation with a vendor may have been obtainable through discovery. So the state's probably trying to preserve its position to the best extent it can. And I should probably stop commenting there, because that decision actually... The decision, I'm pretty sure probably the your attorneys, well, you have maybe some outside also, given the nature of this, understand that also, but your basic attorney is the Attorney General and her staff. Is that correct?
Co-Chair Devlin, that is correct.
Yeah. Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Different topic, slightly. I was hoping maybe since... I think there was some legislation to require that this report come to the legislature somehow, and or be made public somehow. Are you looking into perhaps using the transparency website? And if not, maybe think about that. if there's something we need to do on the Transparency Commission to make that happen, let us know.
Co-Chair Devlin, Representative Thatcher, I am certain that, you know, short of wallpapering my bedroom, it will be publicly available in a plethora of avenues. I don't think the state would have any aversion to posting it on the Transparency website as a place where Oregonians go to get information, but it will certainly be requested by the multitude of journalists who will make it available in all of their journalistic endeavors, and so I don't see any issue with that.
Just wanted to put it on the record. Thank you.
Yes, Senator Olson. The oversight of Cover Oregon was with DAS and it was moved to OHA. Who made that decision, and why was it done?
Co-Chair Devlin, Senator Olson, that statement is a bit confusing to me because the DAS State CIO's office had responsibility for oversight of the Cover Oregon project as a major IT project inside of state government. And so I don't believe we ever transferred our oversight responsibilities to the Oregon Health Authority. The State CIO's office had a quality assurance analyst who worked in partnership with the Legislative Fiscal Office's IT quality assurance analyst for the duration of the project, and so I'm not aware of the circumstances under which you're describing.
So, go ahead. So then your statement is that DAS did have oversight of the entire project.
Co-Chair Devlin, Senator Olson, we had a particular piece of oversight, so our job was to have oversight of the Maximus QA vendor who provided quality assurance on the project. The state CIO's role has been in the past to be the recipient of QA reports and to make sure that both the agency who is running the project and the Legislative Fiscal Office, who is also doing oversight on the project, also receives those reports. But certainly I think that we believe First Data is going to bring back recommendations that include changes to our own oversight process. There have been many bills in this session suggesting changes to that oversight process as well. And so, you know, I think that the hiring of Alex Pettit as the state's new chief information officer and the partnership that the executive branch and legislative branch through your professional staff are trying to execute in reforming the way we work together on large IT projects will continue to be a role DAS has in the future.
So when you received these QA reports, did they raise any red flags, and did you take any action?
Co-Chair Devlin, Senator Olson, you know, certainly our analyst was doing what he believed to be his job, which was to provide the QA reports to the agency who needed to take action in response, to make sure that the agency was submitting plans to mitigate those risks and to provide it to Legislative Fiscal Office. I think DAS will welcome opportunity for new and different escalation in cases of troubled projects in the future.
Yes, Representative Vega Peters.
Thank you, Co-Chair. So how much or if any role did the fact that Cover Oregon is set up as a public corporation instead of an agency have on your ability to oversee it, or, you know, whether it did or whether it didn't?
Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee, certainly I'm also not a lawyer, and so I'm not clear on all of the things that public corporations get excused from in terms of state government oversight. My general belief is that the Department of Administrative Services provided its full oversight while the project was jointly between the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority. We continued to have role in the conversation as it transitioned to Cover Oregon's responsibility. I can't speak to the level of detail that we provided in terms of oversight of the Cover Oregon portion once it was solely at Cover Oregon. Up and through the point that the Oregon Health Authority and its IT staff had responsibility, we were deeply involved.
Look, yes.
Thank you. Is that area something that would be under the purview of the search that First Data is doing?
Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Vega Peterson, we expect that, yes. The co-chair was quite clear in Full Ways and Means this morning that he thinks the creation of Cover Oregon as a public corporation has certainly increased the complexity, and we would expect First Data to bring back recommendations about best practices for ways to handle that in the future.
Thank you.
Just to clarify here, going from Senator Olson's question to Representative Vega Peterson's question, of course, when you look at this, you had this transition in that the original, the development of Cover Oregon in terms of the IT project was vested originally at the Oregon Health Authority. Then the first arrangement that you talked about is true. You provided the QC report to the Oregon Health Authority. Then when that function moved to Cover Oregon, you provided it to Cover Oregon. And you went from an agency-to-agency function to an agency to a public corporation function. Now, I can't comment on if what the result of that was, but it is a little bit complicated in the sense it's not quite the same thing. On your previous slide, maybe, because we don't have your, I don't think we have your slides.
It's on OLIS.
It's on OLIS, okay. I assume First Data has access to representatives from Oracle and is interviewing, you know, key people that have been part of the project from Oracle. Is that correct?
Co-Chair Devlin, members of the committee, the answer to that question is yes.
Okay. My understanding was that Oracle refused to make any of its higher-up officials available for the interview, and the only interviews were by a group of relatively low-level staff.
Co-Chair Devlin, Representative Greenlick, that's not exactly correct. First Data asked to speak to six members of the Oracle project team over time. Oracle agreed to produce one individual, its chief technology officer, who actually reports directly to the CEO of Oracle, and that's the person who participated in the interview process.
Well, then I need to restate my question. They asked Oracle to have six people available, and Oracle refused on five of the six requests. Is that a correct statement?
Co-Chair Devlin, Representative Greenlick, that is correct. Actually,
I thought I said that.
I'm sorry. I misunderstood
I
you said
your
it
correction.
The first
time. Can I get a clarification, though, in that? In the one person, I hate to put you exactly in this position, but I'm just reading eyes here on the committee. The one person that can speak, their chief technology officer, was he or she directly involved in the development of the project?
Co-Chair Devlin, members of the committee, First Data asked for six individuals. The person that Oracle produced was not one of the six individuals. They produced instead their chief technology officer, and I am not briefed on what his involvement was in the Cover Oregon project. We have not been getting briefings from First Data after they've seen individuals. My job has been to meet with the staff to say, who do you want to talk to? And they give me a list of people, and I set up interviews, and they go interview the people. We don't talk about the findings. We don't talk about what's said, except they show up and say, we want to talk to these people next. And so I have no information about what that individual's role was in the project.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
When your report is released, or when First Data's report is released, will the names of those interviewed be redacted, or will they be out for the public to view?
Co-Chair Devlin, Senator Olson, my understanding is First Data intends to both report the list of people who they asked to interview and then separately report the list of people who they were actually able to interview. I don't believe the report intends to make direct attributions to any of those interviews. They're trying to do it in a confidential manner, but it will be transparent who they asked for, who they were able to talk to, and people can draw conclusions about the delta.
Okay. Any additional questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
That concludes our business for this meeting. It probably concludes, I shouldn't say probably, it would take an act of both presiding officers for us to meet again. It probably is our final meeting of this session. So thank you, and thank you, Co-Chair Vega Peterson, and all the members. And hopefully we will be reappointed soon after the close of this session.
Hopefully.